Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
WABC New York and 107.1 WLIR Hampton Bays. It's the 77 WABC News Hour. Talking the news with Noah Layden. All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports, and now Talking the News with Noah on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me, 5 o'clock. Good morning. It is Monday, March 4th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Mix of sun and clouds today. The high going to be 56. Tonight and overnight, showers after midnight, low 45. And then tomorrow, rain, high 51. If you are walking out the door with us right now, 45, partly cloudy in Rye up in Westchester County. It is 46 and clear in Morristown down in New Jersey. And 47, a couple clouds here outside our Midtown studios. So much to get to as we work our way up, 6 o'clock hour. Sid and friends in the morning. What a beautiful, I was going to say weekend, but no, Saturday was just a total washout. And then you had the reward on yesterday. Sunday was just outrageous. I was down with the family in Asbury Park, the boardwalk completely packed like it was summertime. People ready. I'm ready. I'm looking ahead at the weather. And there are some cold days ahead, but you're not seeing a lot of the 30s, and it's like in the 40s. So it is March, and we're close to spring, so we're almost there. Over the weekend, did you watch this? I had not been following this story. Caitlin Clark, who is this woman, female basketball player for Iowa, has been breaking all these basketball college records. Really incredible. And someone had sent me the video of her breaking the record for the most points by any college player ever, man or woman. And it was in as the team was taking on the Buckeyes yesterday. And she broke this record, 3,667 points. So that was Pete Maravich's record. Remember Pete Maravich, Pistol Pete? So she broke the record. Caitlin Clark did.
I think I'm just trying to soak in the moment. A record is a record. I don't want that to be the reason people remember me. I hope people remember me for the way I played with a smile on my face, my competitive fire.
Yeah, she's really fun to watch if you're a basketball fan. Boy, is she good. She knocked down this free throw right before halftime to pass Pete Maravich for the most career points by a man's or woman's basketball player, Division I level. And she said she never imagined she would be that player.
Like, honestly, if you would have told me that before my college career started, I would have laughed in your face and been like, no, you're insane. And, like, I've always been able to score the ball, but I don't think people really understand how many amazing players have come before me and, like, been able to score the ball.
Yes, so that was one basketball record broken over the weekend. And then you had LeBron James, who set his own new record, 40,000 points since playing in the NBA, which is unbelievable. He threw up, what, 40 points, I think it was, in the game over the weekend. He's awfully fun to watch, too, and he's sort of at the sunset, the end of his career, and still playing pretty great basketball. But congratulations to both of them, LeBron James, Caitlin Clark. NASA over the weekend putting another rocket into the air, SpaceX. NASA working together, celebrating the successful launch of the Crew 8 mission. This is headed to the International Space Station.
Engine full power and liftoff of NASA Crew 8. Go Falcon, go SpaceX, and go NASA.
Also fun to watch when it's successful. The SpaceX Crew Dragon Endeavor atop a Falcon 9 booster took off from a launch complex at the Kennedy Space Center Sunday night. The mission is the first for 3 out of 4 members of the Crew X. So here's the interesting part. Our relationship with Russia is kind of cold and has been for a while. But when it comes to the space missions, we're still working very closely with them. So you had 3 Americans aboard for this launch last night, and then a cosmonaut, a Russian cosmonaut. So they'll be at the International Space Station for about 6 months doing all kinds of science experiments. But somehow it's awfully interesting that we're able to work with the Russians when it comes to going to space, but almost nowhere else. But fascinating, no? Yeah. Malaysia's Ministry of Transport announcing this morning that the search for the Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 may be revived for now. It's been 10 years since that mystery. Remember how we were so sucked into that story? That plane just disappeared. They never found any sign of it, essentially. A little more here.
The company Ocean Infinity is offering another no-find, no-fee search of the southern Indian Ocean seabeds 5 years after it ended its private search. Transport Minister Anthony Loke said that if credible evidence is presented, the Malaysian government will do everything possible to get approval for a new contract. The Boeing 777 plane disappeared from radar shortly after takeoff in 2014, carrying 239 people. Satellite data indicated that the plane veered off from its flight path, with the most credible explanation being that it crashed in the southern Indian Ocean. I'm Mark Mayfield.
That story sort of feels like yesterday, right? It's hard to believe it's 10 years ago. Neighbors in Babylon, Long Island over the weekend. All the talk is these body parts that were found starting on Thursday. You had this kid. She was on her way to school, to Babylon Intermediate School. She looks to the side of the road. She sees an arm, a human arm, on the side of the road. She calls her dad. Her dad calls the cops. The cops come racing in. Sure enough, it is a human arm. They continue to do an investigation for the next 24 hours or so and search the area, and then they find another arm. They find a leg. They find a head. And people in Babylon, you might guess, a little freaked out by all this.
I have no words. It's actually just wild that this occurred. This isn't like Babylon. Babylon's very happy town.
Yeah, well, not today. The medical examiner trying to ID the body parts over the weekend. Cops searching for what they think was a driver who dropped them off in South Ards Pond Park. And that's the theory they're going with anyway. They're not sure exactly what took place.
We believe that the persons who dumped the body here were mobile. So, you know, I'm pretty confident that a car was involved.
There are no missing person reports in Babylon, for that matter, across most of Long Island.
It's not good for our neighborhood, so I think we should buckle down on the crime.
How'd they do this without any of us seeing it? You know, like I said, I'm here all the time.
I have no words. It's actually just wild that this occurred where we all grew up. This isn't like Babylon. Babylon's a very happy town. For this to show up in our town is shell shopping.
Yeah, so we checked in with cops earlier today. Not a whole lot of an update on this so far. I guess they're waiting for the medical examiner to finish doing their job, ID these body parts, and then maybe they can piece together exactly what took place. 5:09, big day for the campaign for the White House. Supreme Court going to announce it will issue at least one decision today. NBC's Lawrence Hurley explains why the ruling may be in the case of former President Trump's eligibility for Colorado's presidential primary ballot. Of course, if you've been following this story, they're trying to keep him off the ballot.
The reason for that is that partly the case is being heard on an expedited basis, and second, that the Colorado primary is obviously being held on Tuesday. So there's a reason why the court might want to get this out ahead of that.
Yes, so this opinion will come down at 10 this morning, so about 5 hours from now. This comes after the Colorado Republican Party asked the high court to act before Super Tuesday, which is, of course, tomorrow.
Obviously, they need to get this ruling out, which is not just going to apply to Colorado, but any other state probably that does something similar.
Meanwhile, the former president, Donald Trump, continues his march towards the GOP nomination. Saturday, he won caucuses in Idaho and Missouri. He swept the delegate hall at the party convention in Michigan. Voters making their voices heard three states ahead of Super Tuesday. President taking that win, that victory lap in Michigan. The delegates there over the weekend explaining why they voted for him.
I'm a Trump fan. Again, I do have problems with his personality at times, but we need him.
I didn't like the way that President Trump handled himself after the election loss last cycle. I generally agree with most of his policy positions, but I think that some of his character was not what I would hope to see.
That was on the mind of delegates in Michigan over the weekend who picked Donald Trump. Coming up, of course, again, Super Tuesday. So let's see, the delegate count now is 244 for the former president. He needs 1,215 delegates to clinch the Republican nomination. But there was one race that he finally did not win. Nikki Haley finally won a primary yesterday in the District of Columbia. Nearby, that's where the former president was. He was in Virginia, where he was reminding voters there that tomorrow is Super Tuesday and that they need to get out and vote.
We want to send a big signal, so it's important. I mean, we don't need your vote. We want you to get out, though, and vote in big margins, and we want to send that little freight train going along.
Yeah, and he says, and, you know, first thing he wants to do is beat Joe Biden in November.
This country is a mess. We got 15, 16 million people came in, and they came in from prisons and jails. They came in from mental institutions and insane asylums. We are really going to be a very different country. We have to have it stop.
All right, so after that win in the District of Columbia yesterday for Nikki Haley, she says she's going to stay in the race. She says she doesn't like the direction of the Republican Party is going, and that she says people are encouraging her not to drop out.
Are we going to go where you had Donald Trump? He grew government. He didn't reduce the size of government. He put us $8 trillion in debt in just 4 years, more than any other president.
Haley says Trump wants the U.S. to act like an isolationist state, and she says she thinks most voters disagree with that.
If the people want to see me go forward, they'll show it. They'll show it in their votes. They'll show it in their donations. They'll show it in the fact that they want us to continue to go forward.
Yeah, that haul of money is still coming in for Nikki Haley. So there's no issue of keeping her campaign going for that reason. The money's there. For sure, some of it's coming from Democrats who want to keep her in the race, but also a fair amount of Republicans who are not Trump fans want her to stay right where she is.
This is about really trying to get everyone to realize that this primary isn't between Donald Trump and Nikki Haley. Yes, on the ballot, that's what you see. This primary is, what is the direction of the Republican Party?
The insiders and their contention all along is the weight of all these lawsuits against Donald Trump will finally cave in on him, and she'll be there to then take the nomination. Whether that actually happens or not, we'll have to wait and see. Then you have the Democrats out. First Lady Jill Biden says former President Donald Trump is dangerous to women.
The First Lady made a stop in Tucson, Arizona Saturday for a tour to rally women voters around President Joe Biden. The First Lady said extremist Republicans led by Donald Trump are passing laws that prevent women from getting the health care they need, including IVF. She went on to say that Trump mocks women's bodies, and he's now bragging about killing Roe v. Wade. Biden spoke for about 15 minutes and was interrupted several times by pro-Palestinian protesters. I'm Chris Caraggio.
Yeah, it seems that the First Lady is definitely going to be a pit bull for her husband out on the campaign trail, and women's issues going to be big for the Democrats. That, as a new poll, gives former President Trump a slight lead over President Biden among registered voters.
The New York Times Siena College poll surveyed about 1,000 registered voters nationwide over landline and cellular phones and found that 48% said they would vote for Trump if the 2024 presidential election was held today. 43% indicated they'd vote for Biden in a hypothetical rematch between the two. The poll had a margin of error of about 3%. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
All right, in a moment, we're going to tell you about the fires down in Texas that got worse over the weekend. But first, 5:15, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk. Happy Monday. Good morning, Justin Ellis.
Happy Monday. Good morning to you as well, Noam Layden. We got to start here with the sad news out of the sports world to begin the week, no less. News breaking yesterday that award-winning ESPN NFL reporter Chris Mortensen has died at the age of 72. Mortensen, an award-winning journalist who reported on the NFL for ESPN for more than three decades, joined the sports network in 1991 and was a regular contributor for the network's NFL shows and the titled Sports Center, the Tuttle Show there. In 2016, he received the Pro Football Writers of America's Dick McCann Award, I should say, and was honored during the Pro Football Hall of Fame's enshrinement ceremony in August that year. A regular newsbreaker for ESPN, he was diagnosed with stage 4 throat cancer in January 2016 and stepped away from his role at the Sports Network last year to, quote, focus on my health, family, and faith. Mortensen will indeed be missed in the sports world. On the floor in the NBA, the Knicks had their season flash before their eyes in Cleveland last night, 1 minute into their eventual 107-98 win over the Cleveland Cavaliers. Josh Hart had a triple-double. Dante DiVincenzo scored 28 points, and the Knicks regrouped after losing All-Star guard Jalen Brunson in the first minute with a left knee injury. This was scary non-contact. Hart finished with 13 points, 19 rebounds, and 10 assists, and helping the Knicks cope for one night without Brunson. Their latest starter harder to get hurt.
How bad is it? Do we know?
Yeah, we do know. If you'd let me get to it. I mean, my
Sorry.
God.
Well, go ahead. I won't interrupt you again.
Yeah. No, it's just a knee bruise. It's a knee bruise, Noam. But it's the buildup, you know. We got to make people think, you know, maybe think it was a little bit more serious than it was, or else they won't stick around for the end of the report here.
At 45, I won't interrupt you, I promise.
That's all right. But, yeah, it's just a bone bruise, or a knee bruise, I guess you could say. He stayed in a seated position while play continued. This was the scary part before getting up and limping to the sideline, where he again went down with obvious pain. So it was that second time he kind of went down that you had that sigh of nervousness in the crowd. The 27-year-old guard was helped to his feet and escorted to the locker room after the game. Head coach Tom Thibodeau, this is the relieving part again, said x-rays on Brunson's knee were negative, calling it a mere knee contusion. So we'll see if he's back for their next game. If not, then we'll see when he will be back. Tonight on the hardwood, the Nets return to action, getting set to welcome in the Memphis Grizzlies for a 7:30 p.m. tip-off in the NHL. The Devils were the only local squad in action yesterday, just to get worked by the Kings in Los Angeles. Final score 5-1. Nico Dawes was replaced in the second period after giving up 4 goals on 13 shots for the Devs, who have lost 5 of 7. Timo Meier scored, and Akira Schmid made 9 saves in relief. Looking ahead to tonight on the ice, the Rangers return to action at the Garden, set to face off against the visiting Florida Panthers at 7 p.m. And down at MLB Spring Training Day, the Yankees visit the Miami Marlins at 6:40 p.m. tonight. By the way, Matt Rempe had another big fight this weekend against Reeves in Toronto at center ice, closing out the game. So that was a big story over the weekend. Maybe he should put the fisticuffs away for a couple of weeks now. Those knuckles have got to be bruised. That's your sports, Noam, and I'm Justin Ollick on 77 WABC.
WABC News Time 520. Let's go down to Texas. That fire just getting bigger over the weekend. It is the worst in Texas history. Not the news locals had hoped to hear, as they're already dealing with enough misery from the blaze.
It's going to take years and years for us to get over this situation here.
The Smokehouse Creek fire has burned over 1 million acres across the Texas panhandle. It actually leaped into Oklahoma over the weekend.
There are about 400 to 500 structures that have been destroyed.
Yeah, National Weather Service says strong winds, continued dry conditions in place for this week. Red flag warnings have been posted across Central Plains, meaning there's a high risk of fire danger affecting over about 8 million people. Down to Washington, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas says cities around the country that cooperate differently when it comes to immigration authorities. So like in New York City, we don't cooperate with ICE. Other cities do. Mayorkas asking those cities to report illegal immigrants who pose a threat to the public, making those comments all in response to the death of that Georgia nursing student, the 22-year-old Lakin Riley, who was murdered by a migrant from Venezuela.
We firmly believe that if a city is aware of an individual who poses a threat to public safety, then we would request that they provide us with that information so that we can ensure that that individual is detained.
Yes, so New York City doesn't cooperate with ICE, even though the mayor has asked the city to do so now. An illegal immigrant from Venezuela arrested last week in the abduction and murder of 22-year-old Lakin Riley, who was laid to rest on Friday. Mayorkas says if cities alerted them of dangerous individuals, they can make sure they were detained and potentially deported.
Our hearts break for and our prayers are with the family, number one. Number two, and importantly, as a prosecutor, having prosecuted violent crime and other crimes for 12 years, one individual is responsible for the murder, and that is the murderer. We work very closely with state and local law enforcement to ensure that individuals who pose a threat to public safety are indeed our highest priority for detention and removal.
Of course, this is all connected to just the mess at the border. Senator Marco Rubio says President Biden needs to reverse executive orders he made to end the border crisis. The Florida Republican says he would support the president if he did take executive action related to the border.
Well, the realistic path forward, if we want to end this crisis, begins by Joe Biden reversing the executive orders that he made. Every single one of them was designed to reverse a Trump policy.
Rubio says if the president would have already done so, he would have supported funding for Ukraine. You know, all these bills are connected. Rubio says criminals from other nations crossing the border, continuing to be criminals once they make it here, as we have seen with those incidents right here in Times Square.
All those executive orders that are basically, for the first time in American history, we have a president who will not detain the people who entered this country illegally. Had he done so, I would have voted for the funding for Ukraine and all the other things, because I've supported Ukraine funding. But we have to prioritize this American crisis that we have in our hands.
523. House Intelligence Chair Mike Turner says CIA Director William Burns told him a ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war is really close. In fact, we're hearing from Israel this morning that the deal they've put out, the deal that's on the table, they're willing to sign off on. So far, Hamas has not done so. Turner says the potential deal comes, of course, weeks of negotiations with international leaders.
I was just briefed by the CIA Director Burns Friday, personally. He is the one who is conducting the ceasefire negotiations, and he believes that we're close, and I think that is very, very important to accomplish.
The congressman says it's important to get the deal done because there's still hostages, of course, being held by Hamas in Gaza today.
There are hostages that are still being held as a result of Hamas and the murderous onslaught of October 7th. Also because of the desperate need for aid to get into to Gaza. What's unfortunately is the Palestinians are being held hostage by Hamas. So they're down in bunkers, cowardly not responding to the conflict that they began.
Yeah, and this is what we're being told. This would be a six-week ceasefire, and the hostages would be released in return for the release of Palestinian prisoners being held in Israeli jails. The Israel, again, has signed off on this deal. They're waiting for Hamas. Meanwhile, humanitarian aid getting into Gaza over the weekend. The U.S. for the first time dropping meals into Gaza from planes.
Earlier this week, top U.N. officials warned a quarter of Gaza's population, more than a half million people, are near famine.
That's NBC's Peter Alexander. Pentagon officials say three C-30 aircraft dropped more than 60 pallets carrying 38,000 meals into Gaza early Saturday. President Biden ordering that drop. That going to continue. They're going to do a second drop on Wednesday. Other nations have been doing this. Jordan has dropped off meals.
We know these civilians need access to aid, need access to food. The president committed to making sure that that happens. And now it looks like these are the first stages of keeping that promise.
And there are people who are watching this all on the sidelines saying they could get meals into Gaza quicker to help the people who are hungry. World Central Kitchen chef Jose Andres says he has meals ready to go in Egypt. And he just needs to be able to get into Gaza till he can deliver those meals.
This is the perfect example that shows you that really people are in need of food and water. They are desperate. Mothers, fathers, they want to feed their children.
Yeah, and he's ready to hand over some of those meals to do the airdrops as well.
The solution is fairly simple. Let's open more places around Palestine that we can access with trucks, and very quickly we can stop that famine immediately in 2-3 days.
Yeah, the UN claiming about a half a million people just a step away from famine.
Right now we have hundreds, if not thousands, of people, of volunteers that help us. Not only the infrastructure of bringing the food into Gaza, but the cooking of the food and the delivery, person to person, 10 to 10, so everybody in our camps is able to receive food.
Yeah, okay, we'll watch this story as the day wears on. Again, Israel agreeing to the ceasefire late yesterday, waiting to hear back from Hamas. Let's bring it back home. Alcohol-related deaths, we're finding now, surge during the pandemic.
That's according to numbers from the CDC, which found that there were over 480 deaths per day from excessive drinking in the U.S. during the height of the pandemic. Officials say social isolation, stress, and delays in getting medical care could have been a factor. Alcohol carryout and home deliveries were also more available, officials added. The CDC says the spike in deaths could give states a reason to make alcohol less. I'm Jim Forbes.
The opening bell, it rings this morning after stocks close higher to end the week. The tech-heavy NASDAQ hit an all-time high a day after topping its 2012 record. Chip maker NVIDIA gained another 3.5% to help boost the markets on Friday. So at the closing bell Friday, the Dow rose 91 points. S&P 500 added 40. NASDAQ gained 183 points.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noam Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports. And now,
Talking the News with Noam
on 77 WABC.
Yep, that's me, 5:32. Good morning. It is Monday, March 4th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Sun, clouds today, high 56. Tonight and overnight, the showers come in after midnight, low 45, and then Tuesday, rain on and off, high 51. If you're walking out the door with us right now, so happy you are, 45 and partly cloudy in Rye up in Westchester County. It is 46 and clear in Morristown down in New Jersey, and it's 47 and partly cloudy outside our Midtown studios. We'll start this half hour up in Central Park right here in Manhattan, where they... hundreds showed up to pay their respects to Flacco the Owl. That was the owl that someone cut open the enclosure to at the Central Park Zoo, and Flacco was able to get out and then lived life on the outside for about a year until he flew into a building last week and died. Well, they had a memorial to him outside this tree that apparently he liked to hang out in.
They're very moving, so... But he captured the imaginations not only of children, but of adults.
Yes, to this memorial, by the way. It's a 102nd crossing, which is right at the top of the park, East Drive. I want to say dozens of flowers, but really it was hundreds of flowers. Notes, pictures, all kinds of people showing up yesterday. Curtis Sliwa told me he was going to go. I don't know if he ended up going or not.
Exactly what I'm sure Flacco wanted and what Flacco deserved, what Flacco should have been doing.
Such just a symbol of New Yorkers being independent and wanting to get their way and live freely.
It is so interesting to me. I mean, I love animals. Don't get me wrong. I love my dog. Dog sleeps cuddled up to me every single night. I love it. But I can't imagine that I would show up to a memorial service for an owl.
Between intermittent breaks and ambient city noise, we listen for hooting.
Oh, you know, I didn't set this up right. So this woman got up and she read a poem about Flacco. Here it is.
Between intermittent breaks and ambient city noise, we listen for hooting. Hoo. Hoo. Across the intersection and more than 16 stories up, Flacco's nightly performance had begun. It seems fitting that he hooted on Broadway.
Okay. people were in tears yesterday at this memorial.
It's really all about the love that people have for him.
I saw him many times. It was always a magical moment. You would see him kind of going from window to window, looking in at people's apartments. And I think that was one of the sort of charming, weird things that he would do.
Yes, so then there was a guy who got up and said he was going to do a song on his saxophone. And he played this long, drawn-out song on a saxophone that I'll spare you because he really wasn't good at the saxophone. But then this guy got up, and I'm not going to spare you this, and you'll be happy. He said he had written Flacco the song. So, of course, I went searched hard for this because I wasn't actually at this memorial, and I found it. And here you go. Flacco the song sang at the memorial yesterday in Central Park.
Oh, Flacco the owl upon my roof. Oh, Flacco the owl, I am so like you. Did my research, you like to perch high above spots like the cliffs in the rock. When you're called for a mate, meets a lonely fate. Is your oh, Flacco the owl upon my roof.
Catchy, no? All right, we get it. When Curtis gets in, we'll ask him if he actually attended that memorial. 5:36, two staff members at a Brooklyn high school alleging anti-Semitism, a hostile environment. They're pointing their finger at administrators and school's chancellor for turning a blind eye. It's Danielle Kaminsky. She's a global history teacher at Origins High in Brooklyn.
I live in fear going to work every day. I've had students call me a dirty Jew. I've had students draw swastikas on my desk and bulletin boards. I've had students tell me that they want to kill my family. On a former Jewish student, they drew swastikas on his laptop charger. The school has no consequences or They just say it's academic conversation.
Kaminsky's been working at the school for 7 years. She says it's become increasingly more hostile, definitely after the October 7th massacre. Kaminsky says the hateful behavior has resulted in a bunch of students who are Jewish leaving this school. The head of the school saying that they don't tolerate discrimination or hate in their community. And she says she doesn't necessarily believe these stories. But there were a couple people who came out over the weekend. One of them was the campus safety manager who says they've made some complaints to the school system and have not heard anything back. And then you had city councilwoman Ina Vernikoff speaking out over the weekend at a press conference.
At the school, it's not just anti-Semitism that has been left unchecked. There's also been incidents of racism. I've been asking one question from the DOE for the last 8 months. What are the consequences for students who do this, and what are the consequences for teachers? I'm still waiting for an answer.
Yeah, apparently, no. So far, anyway, no consequences. WABC News Time 5:39. We were watching on as a family from Garrison, New York, that's up in Putnam County, were here in the city yesterday. It's been a month since their 26-year-old son, Colin Marma, went missing. He had been at a bar in Washington Heights. This was back on February 2nd. Has not been heard from since. His mom came into the city with a crew of people to go to police precincts, asked them if they could help in the search, just walk some of the path that maybe he had taken, hoping to find the 26-year-old.
And that night, the last time he used his money card, the last time he was in his car was in Hamilton Heights. He went to the Blessed Bar and Kitchen. He ordered one drink. He used his debit card. And in the car, he left his phone behind as well. So we have nothing.
Yeah, they don't have a whole lot to go on. As of last night, this group of volunteers was canvassing local hospitals. They stopped by food pantries, shelters, police precinct. They were handing out flyers, hoping somehow somebody had seen them.
We had people go around each precinct personally and give a personal plea to please look out for Colin. We also canvassed many of the hospitals with several flyers.
We know that he likes walking around outside, so we're going to canvass the parks today, and we're also going to try to hit as many subway stations because we think that's a likely spot for him.
Yeah, so they spent the day yesterday looking for him. No sign of him at all.
I was so excited. I actually thought maybe we had found Colin, but it wasn't Colin. Some days are hard to, some days are hard to function and go on, and with a plan.
Yeah, and they just say they have no idea where he could be. Congestion pricing getting closer to becoming a reality here in the city. If you think these public hearings that are going on again today will be the last day, are going to change anything, you are absolutely wrong. In fact, the MTA chair, CEO Jana Lieber, over the weekend saying as far as he concerned, congestion pricing is going to happen no matter what.
This was enacted as a matter of state law in 2019. The MTA is just trying to implement it in an effective way that's fair to everybody.
Yeah, so that implementation is where Lieber says the public meetings, although required by law, still matter. And he says the board members who are at these meetings are listening closely to see if maybe they can change things for the better.
This process is real. There is a toll structure on the table, but we're getting comments on it. Does it make sense? And how might you adjust it? So we're taking it very seriously.
But like all public hearings that we've told you about public hearings in the past, it's usually a done deal. Nothing's going to change. So this is what's going to happen. The current structure would scan tolls when drivers head into Manhattan south of 60th Street. You'd have to pay $15. All that money going to be used for badly needed upgrades and maintenance to the subway system. A bunch of groups, of course, trying to stop this legally, but it doesn't look like they will be able to do that.
The economy today, everything's going up. You know, they take it and strive, and maybe down the road, maybe in another 9 months to a year, possibly.
Yeah. Some of the drivers who are speaking out saying, it's hitting the poor people harder than anybody else.
Just always sticking to the poor. The rich people that can really get the money from, these billionaires and millionaires, they're not going to be affected.
Yeah, so two more hearings again today, one at 10 a.m. and one at 6 p.m., and then it's done. And then the thought is this could begin as soon as June. More violence down below on the subways. A man taken to the hospital after he was pushed onto a platform. This was about 6 o'clock last night. This 64-year-old victim was on his phone waiting for the train when this unknown man approached him, kicked him in the back, causing him to fall onto the tracks. The man was helped back onto the platform, thankfully, before any train came in. He suffered a knee injury, a back injury, taken to the hospital in stable condition. The creep who shoved him, of course, is gone.
Honestly, sometimes safety might be like something to worry about.
Yeah, so how many attacks has this been in the last week? I've lost count. A few hours later, at 168th Street, a 17-year-old woman got into a verbal dispute with an unknown woman, was punched multiple times. The attack took place on the mezzanine level of the AC line. Then you had all those attacks last week, including that conductor who was slashed as he stuck his head out the window, you know, like they do when they're coming in or out of the station to make sure the platform is clear. And he had 34 stitches. So that's one of, I think it's six attacks. Honestly, I've lost track.
In New York in particular, people watch out for each other. So it's kind of what defines the city.
So this is what we have stat-wise. January, February of 2024, of course, this year, major crimes on subways jumped 13.2%. By the end of the February, though, there were 310 attacks last year. This year, there's been 351 attacks by the end of February. So if it feels a little unsafe or down below on the subways, it is. All right, in a moment, we're going to get into this terrible fire that took place in New Jersey. But first, 5:45, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk, where we find Justin Allen.
Thank you, Noam Layden. Start here with the sad news out of the sports world to begin the week. News breaking yesterday that award-winning ESPN NFL reporter Chris Mortensen has died at the age of 72. Mortensen, the award-winning journalist who reported on the NFL for ESPN for more than three decades. He joined the network in 1991 and was a regular contributor for the network's NFL shows and Sports Center. In 2016, he received the Pro Football Writers of America's Dick McCann Award and was honored during the Pro Football Hall of Fame's enshrinement ceremony in August that year. A regular newsbreaker for ESPN, he was diagnosed with stage 4 throat cancer in January 2016 and stepped away from his role at the Sports Network last year, quote, to focus on my health, family, and faith. So Mortensen will be missed. Rest in peace there. On the floor in the NBA, the Knicks had their season flash before their eyes in Cleveland last night, 1 minute into their eventual 107-98 win over the Cavs. Josh Hart had a triple-double. Dante DiVincenzo scored 28 points, and the Knicks regrouped after losing All-Star guard Jalen Brunson in the first minute with an apparent left knee injury. Hart finished with 13 points, 19 rebounds, and 10 assists in helping the Knicks to cope for one night without their star point guard, their latest starter, to get hurt. Brunson, who has been carrying the Knicks during a rash of key injuries throughout the starting five, was hurt on New York's first possession. He shot an air ball and landed before stumbling and dropping to the floor near the three-point line. Brunson stayed in a seated position while play continued before getting up and limping to the sideline, where he again went down in obvious pain. The 27-year-old guard was helped to his feet and escorted to the locker room after the game. Head coach Tom Thibodeau said x-rays on Brunson's knee were negative, calling it a mere knee contusion. So a sigh of relief there. Tonight on the hardwood, the Nets return to action, getting set to welcome in the Memphis Grizzlies for a 7:30 p.m. tip-off in the NHL. The Devils were the only squad in action yesterday locally, just to get worked by the Kings in Los Angeles. Final score there, 5-1. Nico Dawes was replaced in the second period after giving up four goals on 13 shots for the Devils, who've lost 5 of 7 now. Timo Meier scored, and Akira Schmidt made 9 saves in relief. Looking ahead to tonight on the ice, the Rangers return to action at the Garden, set to face off against the visiting Florida Panthers at 7 p.m. And down at MLB spring training today, the Yankees visit the Miami Marlins at 6:40 p.m. tonight. That is your Sports Gnome, and I'm Justin Alec on 77 WABC.
All right, let's get you up on some of the big stories of the morning. NASA, SpaceX, celebrating the successful launch of the Crew 8 mission to the International Space Station last night.
Engine full power and liftoff of NASA Crew 8. Go Falcon, go SpaceX, and go NASA.
Four people aboard this rocket that will go to the International Space Station. Three Americans and a Russian cosmonaut. They'll do experiments and then fly back home after a 6-month period of time. Malaysia's Ministry of Transportation says they're going to reopen the search for the Malaysian airline flight 370 that disappeared. This is the 10th anniversary of the disappearance.
The company Ocean Infinity is offering another no-find, no-fee search of the southern Indian Ocean seabeds 5 years after it ended its private search. Transport Minister Anthony Lok said that if credible evidence is presented, the Malaysian government will do everything possible to get approval for a new contract. The Boeing 777 plane disappeared from radar shortly after takeoff in 2014, carrying 239 people. Satellite data indicated that the plane veered off from its flight path, with the most credible explanation being that it crashed in the southern Indian Ocean. I'm Mark Mayfield.
All the talk in Babylon out on Long Island this weekend were those body parts found in a nearby park. A girl on her way to school on Thursday found an arm, a human arm, on the side of the road. She called the cops. She called her dad. Dad called the cops. And then they continued the search. And over the next day, they found another arm, a leg, a head. They think it's a man and a woman.
I have no words. It's actually just wild that this occurred. This isn't like Babylon. Babylon's very happy town.
The body parts handed over to the medical examiner. Haven't heard any word yet if they've been able to ID those parts.
We believe that the persons who dumped the body here were mobile. So, you know, I'm pretty confident that a car was involved.
Yeah, they think a car drove into the park, and different places they found these body parts, dropped them off. The medical examiner working all weekend. There are no missing person reports in Babylon.
It's not good for our neighborhood, so I think we should buckle down on the crime.
How'd they do this without any of us seeing it? You know, like I said, I'm here all the time.
I have no words. It's actually just wild that this occurred where we all grew up.
Yeah, pretty wild. So they'll continue to that investigation today. So far, we haven't heard anything back about what may have taken place there. The Supreme Court going to issue at least one decision today. This ruling may be in the case of former President Trump's eligibility for Colorado's presidential primary ballot. Of course, tomorrow is Super Tuesday, so they need this information out there to know what's going to happen. NBC's Lawrence Hurley has more.
The reason for that is that partly the case is being heard on an expedited basis, and second, that the Colorado primary is obviously being held on Tuesday. So there's a reason why the court might want to get this out ahead of that.
The opinion or opinions going to be posted at about 10 o'clock this morning. This comes after the Colorado Republican Party asked the high court to act before tomorrow, Super Tuesday.
Obviously, they need to get this ruling out, which is not just going to apply to Colorado, but any other state probably that does something similar.
Yeah, and former President Donald Trump continued his march towards the GOP nomination over the weekend, winning caucuses in Idaho, Missouri, sweeping the delegate hall at the party convention in Michigan. But Nikki Haley did come up with her first win over the weekend. She won the primary yesterday, Sunday, in the District of Columbia. Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman continues to slam Attorney General Letitia James after she sent him a cease and desist letter that orders him to end his new ban on transgender athletes taking part in girls' sports.
The Attorney General's reaction is contrary to the law. Let me say this. Nassau County will abide by the law. We will follow the law. We will follow the state and federal constitution.
The attorney general says Nassau County's prohibition on biological males in female sports is discriminatory and illegal. Last week, the county began banning transgender athletes from taking part in girls' sports. Down to New Jersey, a tragic fire over the weekend. A husband and wife dead after a three-alarm fire tore through an apartment in Passaic. This was yesterday morning. It was about 9 o'clock. Two-story garden apartment complex on Spruce Street. This couple woke up, or they were awake, I should say. It was 9:15. They were making breakfast, and somehow they got caught in this fire and weren't able to get out. The daughter of the mother showed up at the scene.
I got a phone call. I was sleeping. I don't want to talk. I lost my mom.
Police, or I should say people living in the building, say they smelled smoke, saw flames, and were able to get out.
I just hear somebody holler fire, and I come downstairs, and I thought hollering fire, 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 fire. And then everybody started coming out. But that's all. I just got so weak, I couldn't hardly stand up. So
everybody was able to get out. The mayor of Passaic showed up at the scene.
Right now, as a community, we come together to be there for the families in this most tragic Sunday morning in the city of Passaic.
Red Cross telling us they're helping 10 families following the damage who aren't able to go home. Then we had this weird explosion that took place up in Sullivan County Sunday. A home, Sullivan County, now condemned after a house explosion took place just hours after this family had moved into the place. Firefighters Police responding to the scene. This was Emily Street in Monticello. About 11 o'clock, the family had finished unpacking a pair of U-Haul trucks, was heading to bed when suddenly the house just exploded.
I was laying down and all of a sudden the whole house went boom and shook and ran out the door. Spread what we couldn't go.
We heard a bit loud boom and seen a big red poof. You know, back. It blew, blew the back of the foundation out of the house.
Yeah, not the kind of home welcome you want. First responders say windows of the home just completely smashed out. They noticed cracks in the home's foundation. Amazingly, just one person had minor injuries. In Hoboken, business owners there breathing just this huge sigh of relief now. Cops cuffing a man who held up five stores in the Mile Square City.
A full-on ski mask, the ones that like cover all around your eyes, a bucket hat. He had gloves on. I've been working here for 3 years, and nothing like that has happened, or I haven't like heard anything like that happen.
Yeah, neighbors saying they had not remembered these kinds of crimes happening in Hoboken. Police arrested 31-year-old Matthew Trotz. He's from Jersey City. They say he showed up with a gun in all five holdups, showed the gun, thankfully did not use it. They say he grabbed cash and vape products. Now he is behind bars. And a food pantry in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, that has served the community for a bunch of years, now in jeopardy of shutting down as it struggles to keep up with increased demand and a lack of funds. Dr. Melanie Samuels telling us that the corporate sponsors that they normally have, some of them have went away. Some of the individual sponsors have gone away, too, and they're in trouble of closing down.
The cost of food is ridiculous. When you're in a space where families are telling you they cannot afford food, and they're here because of that, even though they have a pretty good job.
Yeah, so this food pantry in Bed-Stuy distributes food to about 14,000 families every week. So it is a big deal. We'll go to WABCRadio.com. We'll post the information for this Bed-Stuy Brooklyn pantry if you want to help out.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.